Howdy, y'all. Thanks for coming back to Street Fight Radio. We're glad you're here. We're doing it three times a week. I think I got the posting down. Feeling better. I'm more on schedule. If you subscribe on iTunes, SoundCloud, or any of the Android podcasting apps, you'll get us every single week, three times a week. It's that easy. It's absolutely free to listen to Street Fight Radio. My name is Brett Payne. My co-host here is Brian Quinby. We are the number one anarcho-comedy radio show in any station across the nation. We've been doing it big for like 6 years now. We've been letting everybody know that all of this shit, this whole system is so corrupt and that it's bankrupt and all the other ups that we can say. But this capitalism is bunk, baby, and we got to move away from it, away from the markets and away from this garbage. And, you know, there's no other place where you can go and talk about this stuff. So that's what got us into our current situation, broadcasting out of the 614 area code, Columbus, Ohio, the heartland. We're trying to get everybody to start having a different conversation, one that doesn't revolve around Republicans and Democrats, but about what's really going on in our lives and who's really holding the bag. We are here to unbrainwash the masses and bring about a horizontally organized, egalitarian party of folks that are ready to get down and have some fun. Holler if you hear me, no matter where you're at, even if you're in the gym or the car. Come on now.
What is up, people?
We got to impeach the president, baby.
Yeah, is that something you're hoping will happen?
No, it's a really an excellent old song by the Honey Drippers.
We got to impeach the president. We got to impeach the president, baby. Was that the song?
No, no.
That's close, though, right?
Yeah, I mean, not guess. Really. I don't know.
Baby.
Yeah.
Baby.
No, we're not doing Jordy either. I don't know, man. It's a tough week. I'm in dire straits after Pittsburgh. I've been drinking a bunch of Malort. I'm on the last of my Malort because that stuff is really hard to drink enthusiastically.
Brett is broke. I am kind of the shoes on the other foot now. I am not all the way there, but I'm just living on borrowed time right now. So we're getting close to Patreon time, baby.
I know.
Let the money flow.
That's the beacon, and that's the beacon on the horizon.
Doing a show and doing a Columbus show. Our next show is a Columbus show. It's five blocks from my house.
Yeah,
I'm gonna be able to walk to this thing. Well, I'll drive. I can guarantee I'll drive, but I could walk. Maybe hold me accountable. Maybe I'll do a march from like my house. I'll tell the listeners to meet me at a corner and we'll march across town to the show. And then we'll all walk back to their cars afterwards.
Yeah, I'm sure we can figure something out.
You want to march? You want to do a march like across my neighborhood?
I mean, let's do a weed walk.
Do you think somebody's going to stop you from doing that in my group?
Let's call it a WE-D walk and let's get a banner to hold up front.
No banners. Don't draw attention to yourself if you're going to smoke weed. It's still against the law. We're not medical patients yet, although
no, I think it's time to be ostentatious about it. But I want to say, but the point is that I am like, I only have like $60 until Patreon day, and I had to spend $60 at the grocery store today, and it was felt so constraining to me. That I couldn't just buy everything that I wanted, you know?
I hate it when I go to the grocery store and I walk by something and I look at it and I'm like, fuck, I really want that.
It's a good deal in bell peppers.
Yeah.
But I don't have a recipe that needs them, so it's just an additional $1.50, and I don't need an additional $1.50 right now.
I did
some lean grocery shopping today. Lots of flour, lots of pancake mix, lots of bread, like the pasta noodles, the stretch foods.
Ugh, fuck, dude.
But
you
can
come over to my house and eat this
weekend.
I
wanted to go out to eat so bad. All day long I put off preparing dinner, and I was just like, because when you have like under $100, I'm like, get it out of here. Just fucking spend it so that way we're not like dancing around it and you know, like pretending like every single dollar counts. Just fucking get rid of it all and we'll deal with the fucking cupboards and what's in there.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I see what you're saying. Yeah, we had to do a few of those weeks here recently where like we just had to live on what I make doing Lyft, which is like Come on, yeah. Man. Anybody that knows anything about Lyft knows that it's going to take me 24 hours to get $200. Is that good?
What?
24 hours, $200? Like actual working 24 hours, those hours?
Yeah, I mean,
you know?
It's less than 10, man. Less than 10 is unforgivable.
Right.
I mean, yeah. that's just not acceptable at this point.
Yeah, but yeah, I
mean,
hate...
you can't call it great. I mean, what can you say? I mean, sure, it's nice that you can get whatever little money you can, but that's the best you can say about it.
Yeah, I'll always be like, we need to rethink eating when we get real poor. Like, maybe we don't need breakfast, lunch, and dinner to be an actual meal. It could just be like two blueberries for breakfast, maybe.
You got to get down to the cheap stuff, man. You got to get like the sugared grains.
Yeah, we
like
do that a lot.
All the cereal. You need to have cereal for dinner.
Cake. Cake. Like pancakes, cake.
Oh, yeah, pancakes
cake.
For dinner.
Any kind of variation on cake, dude, is like satisfying.
It's yeah, 85 cents for a box of pancake mix. And
you
like
can get them even cheaper.
69 cents for a bottle for syrup. And you can have pancakes for dinner. And it's like better than spending $35 on dinner sometimes.
My kid loves pancakes for dinner.
Chocolate chips and blueberries and raspberries and shit in there.
We have friends that like are like not into pancakes for dinner because it's like they were stuck doing it a lot when they were kids. My parents,
they were scarred by it. I mean, I can understand being scarred by welfare.
I do too.
Welfare
or not
meals.
Like, yeah, it being like, oh, we're just forced to have, hey, look, we're eating pancakes again. I used to hear about this family I knew that had popcorn for dinner. And it's just like, I can see not eating popcorn anymore once you've had popcorn for dinner. You know what I mean? But like, my kid thinks it's a damn treat to have pancakes and eggs for dinner. That's like her favorite meal. She, like, I started thinking, like, you don't even have to raise them to have a separation between the meals. You can eat any way you want.
Sure, for sure. And especially if you only have $4, breakfast for dinner is definitely a way easier thing to pull off.
That's true. That's true. All right. So we hit Mike Rowe on the last episode.
No, I was with Mike Rowe, and you wanted to turn all the hardworking pieces into cute, fuzzy animals.
Right, yeah. I mean, I don't mind turning them. But he had the sweat pledge that I saw earlier.
Oh, yeah. Someone had sent that to us, and I wish I knew the name because
I have
people
it. The
really
name,
appreciate. Oh, great.
I have the name, and it's Chelsea, Chelsea underscore Xtian, Chelsea Christian. Sent me a link to a picture of him holding the pledge.
Okay.
The sweat pledge. And I read it, and I'm not fond of it, Brett.
I got to know what's in the sweat pledge.
Would you like to take the sweat pledge, my conservative buddy? Hardworking?
I do a lot of sweating.
Brett cares so much about hard work. Like, he doesn't, he's just like... He's like, hey, man, I thought I was going to get to do hard work for a living. Turns out I'm a coward and a sissy.
No way. I do plenty of hard work.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, there's a lot of sweat that goes into making all this happen. And it's me, really.
Yeah, that's true. But I'm saying, like, carrying stuff.
Oh, I don't get to carry
like
stuff.
Like, lifting.
No.
And the kind of jobs that Mike Rowe talks about being, like, the most romantic jobs. But I will tell you, if somebody told Brett and I that we could make enough to live if we just went to a place and lifted a certain amount of boxes every day, I think both of us would be doing it right now.
I would stop doing this. If I could get, like, $60,000 a year to throw boxes, I would stop doing this.
I mean, I would have almost done anything else, you know, when I was doing that. But now it's just like,
no, I love driving a forklift is so fantastic. My wife is always like, how are you so good at parallel parking? I'm like, forklift, baby.
And I want to be honest, like, I would, this job that we're doing now is the best job in the world, and nothing is better than
for
this.
Sure.
Like, I love doing what I do, but like, at times in my life, I sometimes thought, like, if I could, like, I could get a job in an office and make $60,000 a year. Okay. That's what I thought I was going to get when I graduated from college. You get a bachelor's degree. Yeah, it's in sociology. You can't really get anything, but somebody will let you fill out spreadsheets as long as you got that piece of paper. You know what I mean? So get that piece of paper, and then this happens. But even at the time where I was starting to look at getting real careers and like buckling down, if Street Fight hadn't happened, what my next steps in life were going to be, it was realistically like I could be a teacher, like I could go back to school and be a teacher, or I could like fill out spreadsheets or something like that. You know, I wanted to be a teacher, obviously, but the spreadsheet stuff was also the other thing that I had made myself qualified to do. And I was like, maybe I'll just go do that for $60,000 a year. And like, didn't I just, I couldn't do it. I would have rather, I was starting to get to the point where I was like, I'd rather throw boxes, I think. And my wife was like getting crazy about it. Like she's like, you don't want to throw boxes for a living. And I'm like, it's easier. It's just all like offices seem so hard to me.
No, there's so much mental strain to put up with. And then there's lots of deal when you do, even with you're dealing with clients, you're dealing with a lot of abuse from clients, especially if you're doing customer service stuff. If not, if you're doing internal stuff, it's even worse because it can't be used against you in a court of law, really. Like they get their
well, and I'd like, with you. I'd like to say to the listeners that are having trouble, I'm serious about this. If you're able to do it and you're having trouble in an office, like somebody, you can get a job like doing something more physical, and it generally is, you can make money. People at some point start paying you. You know, if you're doing like construction, if you're doing roofing, you can learn how to be better and move up in that world. That's a very objective set of skills. You know what I mean? People that are good at it are good at it. You can tell. You know, it's not like being in an office where it's like, this month we're judging on, you know, spreadsheets filled out per minute with 3 mistakes or less, you know?
For sure.
And like, I love the romance. There is a romanticization of it for me, but I also think that it could relieve a lot of stress from a lot of people's lives to maybe, if you can make the same amount of money in a warehouse, just do that until you find the thing you want to do.
Sure. I don't know.
You don't know? You don't think so? Like, you don't think that, like, not even a warehouse, maybe welding or something? Because that's the dirty jobs thing to me. The thing about Mike Rowe is that, like, he's saying stop, and we'll get...
UPS is paying, like, $8.50.
Okay.
And you can also work at the movie theater for $8.50.
Right. That's true. I should be more clear about, like, I shouldn't say a warehouse. I'm saying, like, you could go learn to weld.
There is special.
Or you could go learn.
I know a journeyman pipe fitter that makes a very decent living and works on, like, pipes that are, like, 4 and 5 feet across. And I know people that do welding underwater that make, like, $38 an hour.
I mean, garbage men used to make a big living doing that. I think they've been...
The post office used to as well.
I think a lot of the garbage men have been contracted out now to private companies that pay shit. But, like, any of those skilled trades, maybe it is time to be like, I know you went to college. You know what I mean? And I know that you worked to get to where you're going. But if you get out on the other side, of college and... it's not what you want, you can't keep doing it. Like, you should stop doing it if you can, you know? And for people that are able to do it, and I've even talked to like Pinko Snob on Twitter, who said that they wanted to go to, they wanted to go take a look at maybe getting a job at a warehouse, and they just couldn't get hired, you know, just to wind down, just to make money and wind down.
Yeah, I think I hear what you're laying out here, friend. I think you're saying that your sweat shouldn't come from anxiety about your job.
Yeah.
It should come from the toil of your job, but not from like the worry of being in a place that just doesn't make any sense to you, that you feel completely awful in.
Right, yeah. So that being said, I want to get into the sweat pledge. This is from 2011. This is 2013. I'm sorry. September 2nd, 2013, Mike Rowe signed this. Number one. Oh, God, you're going to hate this guy by the end of the spread.
I don't know. I think we're going to be buds, man. I've been drinking enough. I think we're buds, especially we bonded over Monopoly last night.
I guess you did.
I don't like SJW Monopoly at all.
I believe that I have won the greatest lottery of all time. I am alive. I walk the earth. I live in America. Above all things, I am grateful. So he's just grateful that he lives in America.
That's honestly the only thing that keeps me going.
Yeah, yeah.
There's no other reason because everything else is pretty. I mean, it's like death seems better than most days of what the way things that are going.
Okay.
So it's better to just be like, well, at least I got a shot. You know, everything is against me. And even when Street Fight started, we were in a way more minority position. We were like the tiniest percentage of point of view. So things have now that I've stuck it out. So I'm with him on that one.
Oh, Jesus Christ. If you agree,
you're not grateful. You're not grateful to be alive.
I mean, I'm grateful to be alive. I wouldn't have thrown America in there. Sure. Really? I mean, I feel lucky that I grew up in the privilege of living somewhere where I could be like, oh shit, you know, but I don't think it's because of America necessarily.
I think,
you know,
gratitude is something that I tell to Charlotte every single day. Like every time that she's playing with things, I tell her to be grateful that she even has more than one Barbie. Every chance I can, it's the only thing that I think can get rid of like some of the negative thoughts or depression is you have to just be thankful that you had a shot, you know, like the bad shit is like feels awful, but if you can just cut it off and say, I thank God that I'm alive to feel the bad shit. You know what I mean? I'm grateful I got to feel some bad shit. I mean, that kind of washes away a lot of that, you know?
Yeah. Okay.
Hey. I'm with Mike Rowe.
Right on, Mike Rowe. You're maybe, I mean, hey. If he changes, yeah, I don't know how this is all going to work.
Chapter in Street Fight. Yeah, what's next?
It's going to become like Hannity and Combs, where I'm fucking screaming at you all the time about.
Let's hear it.
I believe that I am entitled to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Nothing more. I also understand that happiness and the pursuit of happiness are not the same thing.
Yeah, but you also think that America has something to do with it, and they're the motherfuckers that tell us what we can and can't do.
Yeah, a lot of my unhappiness.
Yeah, go ahead. Sorry.
A lot of my unhappiness is because of things.
America does.
Yes.
America causes all of the problems. I would like to erase the America part because they say they provide the freedoms, but all they're doing is metering the freedoms. They got all the freedoms in a bag and they're saying which ones we can and can't have. I'm talking jive now.
Yeah, really. Jeez, come on, man. I'm trying to send this thing to myself that I can use it. But I do not like that.
No, America has to be changed. American solutions lead to American problems, and American problems are horrible. And so we have to pivot into some other thing where we can fuck up in a direction that benefits more of us than just the people on top.
I like that.
No more banana republics, you know?
I like that. So we can fuck up.
In a more egalitarian direction.
Right. Yeah, I see what you're saying. I don't like anybody who is like, you're entitled to the pursuit of happiness. You're not entitled to happiness. Because I would like for that cuts against the thing where I'm like, well, a goal of a society, to a society that I would want to be in, is that everybody is fully realized and we should be working toward full realization of people. And if part of your society isn't that.
I'm two ways about this, man. I'm yin and yang on it because I feel that adversity is the only thing that will ever teach you anything about yourself.
Okay. I'm not saying to.
And so there are a lot of things that are put upon us. And these people, these conservative thinkers, they use the government as this adversity because they think they're sharpening people. But I feel like if you resisted that, the adversity that people can find for themselves, if they're able to explore, you know, their own interest, would be way more beneficial to us than just these rudimentary racial and classist systems that they have now, you know?
Yeah, that's true, I guess.
What were you going to say?
No, I'm just saying that, like, it's even an ugly thing to just have thoughts about in a way. I'm not trying to thought police you, please, listeners. But that, like, all we should give people is the bare minimum to get them to the place where maybe they can be happy. You know what I mean? Where like, we're not trying to work with people. Like, to bring up that you're not entitled to it at all is, I don't know. Fuck you, Micro. You know, you got me real irritated. Number three, I believe that there is no such thing as a bad job. I know that all jobs are opportunities, and it's up to me to make the best of them. Please, if you agree with this, then I'm just going to tell the listeners, Brett has never had a job in his entire life.
Yeah, I mean, not all jobs are opportunities. They're just something that you can do until you get the next one, really.
A huge percentage of jobs are not opportunities. You know, like a job at McDonald's is an opportunity in like maybe the smallest way, you know, like a manager job where they take most of your life away from you and make you be at that fucking restaurant and then also pay you barely enough to be middle class.
Well, I mean, it is where they give you, like, the training wheels on, like, jumping on a register and fucking with money and stuff. Because, like, other places, they're like, have you ever fucked with money before? And it's like, how do you do that? It's like, McDonald's will let you give a shot.
Yeah.
We'll give you a shot.
Right. It's still a bad job, though. That's a bad job. It's a shitty job. And it's the fact that,
there's no opportunities there. I mean, the more time you spend there, like, you're giving more of yourself for very little reward.
To say that there's no such thing as a bad job is to say that, like, the labor market is completely fixed.
Yeah.
It's great. You know what I mean? Yeah. And he's saying, again, let me reiterate. He's talking about things like fucking welding and like things that you still need an apprenticeship for, which there are plenty of people going for those jobs. To act like people aren't going after those blue collar jobs is crazy. I still know people that are still chasing those fucking jobs. They're hard to get and they're hard to make a life in. And they're not all, you know, you're usually working for a small business fucking crazy person, you know?
Well, and then always in their world too. So something that is easy to do is to take like a giant brush and clean the inside of like a pipe or something, like a shit pipe, or work at a sewage factory, something like that. And to say that's a bad job, it's a necessary job. All the jobs, you know, a lot of the jobs out there are necessary and they're pretty ugly, but the disconnect is the value. That's exactly where it is. Is like he also thinks, well, you know, if it's really unpleasant to do, that just means we won't pay people to do it, and then what? Then we punish people for making them do it. I don't understand what I'm not grateful about this situation. I'll tell you what, this is where I get off the grateful train with him too, is I'm not grateful for the opportunity for like waste management, which, and you know, farming, like sweat still makes the world go round. That's the only way we have all this food on our plate. That's the only way that we have all of these products in our house is somebody else's fucking sweat.
Well,
but like the way that we treat it is completely incorrect. I mean, it's laughable. And that's where guys like him that just want to do like a stage play about like romanticizing it.
Yeah.
Like
that's
the other day.
That's the thing that bothers me about him is that like, somebody was like, I was like, what jobs has he had on Twitter today? And like people like TV host, opera singer, like all these things.
Poet.
It's like, I think he said he worked at I've heard him give interviews where he's like, I got my first job at a grocery store and I've been grinding it hard ever since, all the way up until this day. And it's like, you did not go from a grocery store to a star on TV. That's like not a traditional career path. That's not any kind of a career path. Like when you get a job, there are a lot of jobs where you get them, it cuts all of your opportunities to do anything outside of work. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's true as well. Because even for big brands, the big corporate jobs I had, a lot of the directors and a lot of the management, you know, they worked there. But the people that were like really climbing up the ladder, and my wife had to deal with the same thing in DC. There's the people that work there, and then there's the people that work there and also show up to like the cocktail hours and like the client things, and like there's people that are working there, spending their whole lives doing these things that are outpacing other people, you know. And it's like, that's not an opportunity. I guess the opportunity to live completely in a job, maybe,
yeah.
I guess, is what's so nice that he's looking for.
Yeah. Well, here's number four, Brett. I do not follow my passions That's a air quote. He put that in quotes, so I had to show Brett that. I bring it with me. I believe that any job could be done with passion and enthusiasm.
That's true, man. I saw this guy iron a shirt on YouTube that absolutely changed my mind. It was so intentional, the way that he did it, and everything creased so perfectly, and he was just a complete master with the instrument.
Right.
Some people are just skillful. I don't know.
I practice
this too. This is mindfulness. This is when like the dishes stack up and I have to do them. I do the dishes every single day, once a day. And you can't get lost in like begrudgingly hating that you have to do the dishes, because you're going to be miserable and you don't want to set yourself miserable every single day.
Yeah.
If you're going to do something that has to be done every single day. So you do have to wash the dishes with vigor and kind of come up with names for the specks of dirt in your mind, or really notice, you know, what it takes to get this shit done.
Yeah. I guess, again, what do you do with that at McDonald's? Like, what do you do?
The motherfucker on the grill that was singing and dancing and flipping and just cracking jokes the whole time.
Right.
That's passion.
Well, you don't flip at McDonald's, first of all. You pull a thing down. They make it as simple as possible
so people can be
plugged in and out. Well, you just smash them all down and then pull the thing down. But what can I do? Like, I guess, like, what I'm saying is, people that work maybe two service jobs or work 60 hours a week, he's telling them to, like, that thing that makes, that thing that you have inside of you that you have to do, like the comedy for me, you and I, like writing, okay? That he's saying, like, that is not the direction you can go, but you can take that writing skill that you have. You can take that skill for talking or being funny. Take that and use it at McDonald's and maybe that'll bring you up. And it's like,
and man, I would say
that's another pursuit of happiness thing with me. Well, People are entitled to pursue their passions. I feel that way.
Well, I'm going to say the reason I agree with him is definitely because I'm a clueless jackass that have like the cushiest life possible. I have manipulated my way to doing anything I want. Absolutely. Like, and so it is easier for me to say to do that, but I think that, I don't know, his shit is just so misguided, like that just is missing the mark. And you know, maybe
it's not, though. People believe in him.
I know,
and like, he is like a guy that's taken a lot fucking more serious than we are. And all I'm saying is, just as he hasn't experienced this thing that he's talking about. I think that's such an important thing to me, because like,
I agree,
the things that he's saying are this like magical thinking. You know what I mean? This kind of, I've had jobs that are soul crushing, that beat you down, and nobody could ever be possibly happy at these jobs. You can't bring your passion to the job. You're barely fucking alive while you're at the job. Like, I've done such shitty fucking things. And for this guy to say, hey, you know, the roofs need to be, we need people to go out and do these jobs. We need to force people to go out and do these jobs that don't want to fucking do them. There's plenty of people that will do those jobs if you pay the money to do the fucking job, which then makes it a good job. You know what I mean? Now it's a bad job. Now, because you make $9.50 an hour as a roofer, that's a fucking bad job, no matter how you slice what kind of job that is.
I had to listen to somebody talk shit about people don't have college degrees again to my face, and I fucking hate that, because that's also people that we throw in there. It's like, they couldn't cut the mustard. They couldn't get a degree. They get bad jobs now. There is bad jobs, Mike Rowe.
Right, and take the opportunity to follow your passion. You're only here one time, and if you have a passion and it's something that you feel strongly about, like, I'm 38 years old. If I listened to Mike Rowe and just dropped my passion, I wouldn't be where I am now. And you know, I've done all kinds of shit in my life, and I'm in a way better place than I ever have been. Like, with my lifestyle, you know what I mean? My lifestyle is great now, you know, because of my job is not a huge stressor on me. It's not making me miserable. And like, he would begrudge you that, you know, he would say, I don't know. I feel like he's not a guy that's experienced these things. And if you're a person that hasn't experienced what it's like to be broken down by a job that like a hard job, that then like speaking on this is something that's like, it's imaginary. The way that he sees the world, the way that he sees these people is imaginary.
That's true.
He talks to the foreman when he goes to a place. He doesn't talk to the guy that's the laborers.
Barely hanging
on. He's not with the laborers because the laborers don't necessarily know what they're doing. It's like all their like when you're as a roofer, I was a laborer. They were like, lay down these fucking foam things and mop fucking glue on or roll glue on it. And then we'll do the next thing. Like, I didn't know what I was doing at any time. And like, I guess, you know, hanging out.
To learn though.
Yeah. And hanging out with the one loyal employee on the job site and walking around with them and saying, boy, this is great. This is really romantic. What's happening here. And then telling people that like, stop fucking studying English literature so that you can go learn how to fucking weld, you know what I mean, because you just should have to do that.
Yeah,
you know, I think that's like the STEM thing. It's very romantic to think about those jobs like that, you know. I kind of was leaning to when I said earlier that I'd rather do something like that than work in a than work at a office. That is true, but that's not romantic. That's fucking, I know where I can survive. You know what I mean? I know where I'm going to have the least like kind of stress that bothers me, you know?
And you know, actually, and this is also a lot of the insecurities and anger that comes from the Fight for 15 crowd, really, is like there are folks like I know, you know, in my family that do very specialized welding that were only making $13 and $14 an hour. They'd work their way up, you know, to $14 an hour. And that was... Damn, you know, because they were doing really good in their industry, you know, or at their place, and you know, the layoffs and all that shit, and that's why when you say Fight for 15 for customer service and for fast food, these people are like, I mean, nobody gets $15 an hour. I feel like that is probably the next step in the conversation, is to see how we can get everybody behind the idea, because it's like, how many of us aren't making 15 right now? How fucked up is that?
It's about like people understanding that everything has, every job has its own struggles.
Yeah.
And that like maybe the welder doesn't understand the struggle of the guy that works at Target, but like they need to understand that each job has different types of struggles. The working the cash register at Target is hard. It's sucks. Awful.
You have to
it
deal fucking with sucks. The worst people in the world all day long. A barrage of people that have no filters and will just say shit to people. They have to try it out on cashiers.
Well, we're somehow convinced that standing on your feet for 8 hours and talking and like every fifth person being mad at you is like an easy thing to do physically and everything. It's like, oh, that's not hard. And it's like, you do it, motherfucker. Like we say all the time, the service industry draft is the only way to solve this, because that's why they think those jobs are worthless, because they're classes of people and that have never had to work in the service industry. They got to skip that and they got to do the thing that they wanted to do. They got to go to the vocational school and learn how to weld, and that meant they were apprentices when they were coming towards the end of, you know, school and going in, and then they just never had to work at McDonald's, right? Because it was just something that didn't pop up. I have a friend who's never worked at a fast food place and was just in his mind like, I refuse to work at a fast food place. You know, that was just a job that I feel like I'm better than that. You know what I mean? In a way. And it's like, it's hard to tell somebody like a job that frustrates you so much. Like, people are often very frustrated with customer service workers for various reasons. Yeah. But like, to make them understand how hard, how that job has its own stressors that make it just as stressful as anything else that anybody's doing, you know, in a reasonable world. Like, it's not just as stressful as like a firefighter, you know what I mean? But we're just talking about like a lot of the jobs in offices and stuff that where they say, I'm not making $15 an hour. It's like, man, you know, you should be. And here's why. And then you explain to them you're taken to the limit a lot of times mentally. It also keeps you cooped up in a building. It's bad for fitness. It's hard to fit things into your, there can be mandatory overtime. That's hard to fit things, or you make salary and you have to work 50 hours a week. And like, you deserve those treatments. It's not an easy thing to do. Call center's not easy.
Yeah, you know, that's not what Mike Rowe's obsessed with, man. He's fixated throwing people into dirty jobs or whatever is, I mean, I really do respect the hell out of all the guys that lay and gals that lay concrete and hammer nails.
Me
and
too, buddy.
Do really intense, like, hard work that makes you die young. My dad is, his lungs are drying from the inside out because of the job that he did, and he didn't make $15 an hour.
Right.
And people are literally selling their bodies. Fracking takes people's lives.
That's like, not a good job.
Fracking is a job that takes people's souls, like, literally snatches people up from the inside out.
Right.
Like, so
Mike Rowe would say there's no such thing as a bad
brave
job.
Brave men, these brave men, and they're, you know, he had a little bit extra on his plate to hand down to his grandbaby so that one day they can grow up and be theater majors just like me and drive a Ford truck.
So number three, I will say number three is probably going to be one number five. I'm sorry. Number five is one we might not hate, Brett.
Let's hear it.
I deplore debt. Which is, I mean, we do too, technically. No, different.
got to strike against debt. You got to not pay it. You got to make them people come to your house and take it out of your wallet against debt.
It's the only way you're going to get it is take it and die in the red.
Rack it up, never pay it back. That's how you deal with debt.
I deplore debt and do all I can to avoid it. I would rather live in a tent and eat beans than borrow money to pay for a lifestyle that I can't afford.
All right. I feel him on that. I'm with you. I'm with him because the credit cards I had, I'm really glad that I fucked up on my credit cards because I could not keep up with it. It was too much and I didn't need all of that. So for me, not paying it means that I don't do a lot of frivolous spending, which I think is better.
You also didn't have the Fat Farm shirt that probably got you sex that with somebody once. You know
fucking,
what I mean?
Like, Carolina Blue Echo sweatshirt. Fucking baby blue. Oh, man. So good.
I mean, I deplore debt, too, because I think we should just be able to get this stuff.
That's true. A lot of this debt is very ridiculous.
But, like, living in a tent than, you know, trying to afford living in a house is kind of one of those things that's like, that's not, I mean, like, you are making life seem like hell. You're making this world seem fucking terrible. Everybody deserves to live in a house. Every single fucking person deserves to live in a house, Mike Rowe.
Well, I have to say, I mean, I don't want necessarily a house, maybe just a clean
every
room.
Every person deserves
a clean room.
Every person who wants a house deserves a house. Yes, I know there are people that don't have houses that are perfectly fine not having houses, okay?
Yeah.
But if somebody wants to have like a two-bedroom garden apartment, they should be allowed to, that should be the house. Like, that's the auto house you get.
So I have to decline. I have to say that I disagree with Mr. Mike Rowe on this. Over the course of developing Street Fight, there have been some people that have lent us some very large amounts of money that I've been able to pay off. But because I respected these people and I was not going to run off on the debt the same way I would on like Chase or Capital One. I think over that period of time, I really was able to fully soak in how amazing and lucky I was that I had generated a type of network of folks that I could, that people would look out for me when
depend
I was in
need.
Depend
on each other.
Yeah.
You, like, you can depend
real
on
real comrade
people.
Shit. Real comrade shit. Like, went down because of some other podcasts, that are in our network of people, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I just don't think anybody should have to live in a tent and eat beans. Although beans aren't really bad. I hate it when people say that, like, oh, you'll be stuck.
You got to do them right.
You'll be stuck eating pork and beans. Oh, no, pork and beans. That sounds like the worst. Oh, no. I believe that my safety is my responsibility. I understand that being in compliance does not necessarily mean I'm out of danger. That seems like another one of those free market things he's pulling out there. Like, ah, come on, man. We don't need but he is saying be careful at work, which is very important. I'm gonna agree with him on there.
No, I'm gonna say for this one, I'm wondering what kind of safety he's talking about, because I feel like when it comes to the conservative agenda, their safety is put ahead of everybody else, and that we pretty much live in a zone where they're like crushing everything diverse and calling every single, you know, Christian American like value something that has to be protected at all costs as they like roll people over, you know.
Well, he's talking about like when you're at work specifically, that it is not your employer's responsibility to make sure that you're safe. It is only your responsibility. Maybe. Which is a little bit
that takes away. Yeah, we need to put that decision in the hands of the workers.
OSHA, right? We're first anarchist pro OSHA show. There's gonna be some kind of OSHA in the future
A way if people are like, it feels real fucking dangerous the way I'm like reaching down in this hole near that swinging blade, and they're like, I think you're right. We should probably change that. I don't know, whatever it is. It probably could happen. I don't know. That's really weird to say. Like, is he carrying a gun? Does that mean he's gonna has a CCW? Is that just his way of saying like, I'm gonna be holding when you see me? You may come out to see Mike Rowe to do a signing for a new book or a new Ford advertisement, and I might have a Colt 45 on me.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if he's talking, I really do think he's talking about like, hey, you know, and which this it's a weird thing because when I was climbing poles, I didn't always wear a hard hat. You know what I mean? And it was stupid just because, you know, how I am. I'm like, I don't like to look silly. And I think hard hats look silly. I always did. And like, they gave me the hard hat. I was there. And I don't think anybody's asking for any more than that either. It's just all they're asking for is give me the equipment. And then he's kind of saying like, well, you know, the government shouldn't be making sure that you wear a hard hat. Nobody should be out there trying to make sure that you're wearing a hard hat. You should just wear the hard hat because it's your responsibility, I guess.
I have to say also, I do have an example that I think blows this apart in that, and I've told the story before, but there was a fellow that they put on a cherry picker, which is this like forklift that can go to the top of a warehouse. But it's really tall. Like, it's really tall. So this guy, during his training period, drove into a high-tension wire.
Did he get killed?
No.
Okay, good. What happened, it's a good story.
The wire snapped, and it wrapped around the cherry picker, and it, like, wrapped around his back. It, like, hit him on his back and basically smashed him, like, up against the glass. And then he kind of just fell down. He had to go to the hospital and shit. But I think that
did everybody laugh at him? That always is like people will laugh for a quick second. Back. Oh, really? He was that bad?
No, I think he was. Yeah,
sorry, I wouldn't make him fun.
No. He just he never came back. Like that was just his last day. They were like, I don't think it's working out with us.
I worked with some people that had some pretty gnarly.
But like work, but that's accidents. Also because they were throwing guys on there. They're like, how fast can you get them trained, man? It's like, I don't know, a couple of days. And it's like, I don't know. We're really trying to run two guys next week, you know?
Like, and what is Mike
Rowe? It's the holidays. You know, it's the holidays. This is an opportunity.
Exactly, right? Listen to this next one that is like the exact opposite of the street fight ethos, Brett. Let me give you this next one. It's number 7, and it says, I believe that the best way to distinguish myself at work is to show up early, stay late, and cheerfully volunteer for every crappy task there is.
Oh, man, I hate to tell other people's stories here, but I recently talked to somebody. I had a conversation with a lady, and she said that her husband does, like, freelance writing, and he was in the big city. He was in D.C. and making money, but now is working remotely in Columbus, and he's working for millennials now.
Okay.
And so he said, I mean, apparently the critique of millennials, they're very emotional. They have to deal with a lot of feelings and people that aren't used to being professional in an adult type way.
Yeah.
22-year-olds that are like running a website that he's writing for, basically.
That's badass, though. Good for him.
But the shock, the most shocking thing they said about working for millennials is that they don't expect him to work more than 40 hours a week.
Yes. Yeah. That is beautiful. That's the way work actually should be, you know? And he's trying to show up early and distinguish himself. It's like, dude, what? No.
Like, you're a buzzkill, dude. What are you doing, man? We're writers here. We don't have to do it all the time. Yeah. They're like, they don't expect him to send in anything on holidays. And they give him vacation, and it's like really cushy. And they're like, I don't know. It's a different tactic, I guess, of business.
Yeah, it's a human way to do it. It's a humane way to conduct business. It's terrific, you know?
Yeah, I understand this. This stuff is like really good in books. Like, this is why I really love Atlas Shrugged, is like it really worships all of this. Like, I get really like revved up when I read about like all the hard work that happens. They're like, they're pouring fucking steel and shit, and like they're glistening abs, and then they like fuck afterwards, and it's like so romantic the way that you can get caught up in this stuff. And then you just see like the misery on people's faces when they're trying to make ends meet with all of these opportunities and all of these chances to distinguish themselves, you know?
I watched my dad work a 48-hour shift one time.
What?
At an insurance.
Goddamn doctor? 48?
Actually, 48. Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Okay. It might have been more than 48. It was Friday, Saturday, Sunday. The whole weekend didn't see my dad because he worked at, I think it was like an insurance sort of company. And they were doing, they had a crisis in their server room. He is a computer programmer. He worked 3 days. And I was like, nobody, that is ridiculous. That is the dumbest thing I've ever seen. Like, and it really like it shook me to the point where it's like, never give them your life like that. Never give them a whole fucking weekend. They don't deserve that. They're not entitled to any of that.
Well, I'll tell you, since I seem to be the more positive one in this, I want to say there was a good opportunity that one of my friends, he worked at a Blockbuster Video, and someone smashed the front window. And he got to stay overnight and get paid, and he got to plug in a PlayStation 2 and play all night while he got paid. So that was a pretty good opportunity, if I have to say so myself.
Right, yeah, that's not the kind of thing you get from hustling at work, though. No, you know what I mean?
No, I mean, you know what I mean? Just work is a place where you can sell drugs easy, like you can sell bootleg movies.
But couldn't
there's a lot of opportunities there.
I mean, it's just this idea of like you're, I think like resigning yourself, resigning yourself that like work is the only thing that's important in your life, you know, like resigning yourself to being like, I mean, I will give more time to my job than I will my family or my romantic life or my artistic endeavors and things like that. He wants to turn people into like, it almost feels like he like wants to romanticize turning into a robot.
Yeah, that's true. Production. It's all about production.
Yeah.
What did you produce today?
I believe that the most annoying sound in the world are whining and complaining. I will never make them. If I am unhappy in my work, I will either find a new job or a way to be happy. Now, hey, listen. You can't change shit at work, okay? You can't negotiate for happiness at your job. That's something you shouldn't be doing. All right. You either quit or you do it. That's the world we fucking live in. Everybody lives in, and it sucks. Opera singer guy that worked on PM magazine.
Yeah. It, I mean, it is. I mean,
like, it can be better. It could conceivably, life could be so much better in the workplace without this guy. And this guy's just saying, like, grin and bear it. Okay, hey, get in there and give it your all.
Keep your head down. Well, and that's what I mean. And that's what bugs me is, like, this guy isn't saying, like, he isn't saying, like, farm workers deserve, like, better treatment and respect in this country. He isn't saying all the maids that do everything or the butchers or, like, all of the people that do really intense, grueling, ugly, grisly, gross jobs and are getting treated like garbage. He's just trying to sell, basically, to armchair conservatives, right? Like, these fuckers that watch Glenn Beck and Bill O'Reilly and Fox News and stuff that...
Working like a server room or something.
Yeah, yeah.
Security guard or something like that. You know what I mean?
My daddy died at a young age of hard work. It was so respectable.
Yes.
Why? Why? Why is he okay throwing these people into the fucking fire like that?
Yeah, it's strange. It's, again, like... When people like this, what this guy's really talking about is organizing, is what complaining is. You know, when you're complaining at work, I mean, it's valid. You're voicing what is making you uncomfortable in that space. Okay. And like, people just have to, people aren't allowed to tell you that you're not allowed to be uncomfortable. That's just, I mean, they can. And they can say, no, we're not going to do anything. But, like, you should have, that's what complaining is to these people. You know, that asking for less hours is complaining.
Yeah. And there's so much time spent on, so much time spent that, like, making sure that we work 40 hours a week. This is, once again, like you said, this is your work is your life, no matter what it is, which is, like, fine. But if you don't do anything, it's not offering anything. Beyond, I don't know. Just there's nothing in it. It's just bankrupt. I mean,
it sounds empty.
It's obviously not fulfilling. People are not fulfilled by it, and it's extremely obvious. The way that we talk about everybody's mad at the government, everybody's mad at the way things are. That's because of those relationships that they're dealing with at their employers and being on edge, like a few paychecks away from God knows what. You know, like you're just not. There's no way to be as like nimble in the job marketplace for a lot of us. Like I am doing this because I am fighting tooth and nail to not be in what he fucking romanticizes. That's why I'm doing entertainment. He's doing it. I mean, out of his own bourgeois thing,
whatever he's doing, man, is I just think that like, when you start telling people to shut up and not try to make the workplace better, not try to organize. I mean, he doesn't specifically say don't try to organize to make things better. But what is he talking about when he talks about complaining? That's the thing you got to ask. And you know what he's talking about because this is the kind of thing that you hear all the time from these conservative assholes. It's, you know, it's got to be tough. It's got to be grueling. And hey, look, if you want to make good money, you got to work really, really hard. Never stop. You never, no matter what you're doing, you never stop and you never ask to have some of your life.
Right. And this is the people that win. These are the folks that are driving the narratives because they're the ones that control the politics, that gut all of the shit to make their own things. And then they are the ones that push this idea that everyone should be working all the time and production should be ramped up to the highest possible point because the most that we can make, you know, the more GDP, the better. And like, they're the ones, but they're also the fuckers that expect people to answer the phone at Verizon on Christmas Day, you know, like they're romanticizing like, and somebody on that day didn't roast a turkey so that I could call and ask why 311 didn't block my number when I was prank calling my friend James.
Exactly. Here's one that's kind of interesting. Number 9, I believe that my education is my responsibility and absolutely critical to my success. I am resolved to learn as much as I can from whatever source is available to me. I will never stop learning and understand that library cards are free.
That's true. That's an Abraham Lincoln life, man. That's that Lincoln lifestyle.
Right. Yeah, that's cool.
Self-educated motherfucking man right here.
Like, I do try to learn. I'm going to say this to Mike Rowe. I do try to learn how to fix things. Somebody was, I can't remember who it was on Twitter, was teasing me because I didn't change my own oil this week. And I'm going to admit right now on this show, I don't know how to change my oil, but I would be willing to go to the library and read a book on how to change my oil and give it a shot. But I've heard it's stupid to do it because it just costs more to do it yourself.
It does. It costs a lot of money, and you have to then take it to the honest place to go get it recycled, which I don't think you're going to do. You can get it done way cheaper.
But that's also not a replacement. If you're going to make the credentials from college like the thing you need to have a good job, just a free library card isn't the replacement from that.
No, that does nothing at all.
I think like that's what he's saying, though, right? Like, if you can't afford to go to college without taking out a loan, then you need to just go to the library and read every day.
Yeah, this is getting into Zig Ziglar, like, self-improvement territory bullshit, where everybody is supposedly this, like, shining beacon of, like, inspiration and new ideas and knowledge and energy and all this shit. And it's like, that's not the case at all.
Yeah. Yeah, listen to this, number 10, Brett. I believe that I am a product of my choices, not my circumstances, said the rich white guy. But not my circumstances. I will never blame anyone for my shortcomings or the challenges I face. I will never accept the credit for something I didn't do.
That one, yeah, I mean, that one, I don't know what, it's hard to, like, when people think that they are better than everybody else, like Mike Rowe, they do this thing where they just want to hand out knowledge. It's like, it's easy. You're a loser right now, and you could be so much better. And I don't know what draws them into it, but, like, for me, I guess I've always been a numbers guy, and I think statistically I'm achieving something that only a small amount of people can do, you know? But I don't blame everybody else for not, like, doing a podcast for 6 years and, like, you know, being a stay-at-home dad living my fucking life. Like, I don't hold that against anybody, I guess.
Right.
Where I defer on this matter
The way I feel about this is the guy that's saying we all have the same, like, that everybody has the opportunity to be a person that, like, everybody has the opportunity to be successful in the United States. And that's not true. We don't all have the same opportunity. It's their access, maybe, to it. But there are a lot of people, like born on third base. And there are a lot of people that don't ever even get a chance to go up to bat. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, that's where we are. I mean, that's the stakes. I mean, that is what it is. For anybody that knows what real struggle's like, there's no way you could just think that giving somebody a few like pats on the back and some mantras like this can change.
Go get a
the
job.
Way that things are set up. I mean, there's just the access to all of the things you need is so,
yeah,
it's cut off for a lot of people.
It's just, and these people that say this is like a guilt neutralization tool. It's a, we don't need to do anything about this. The system's not the problem. It's the people that we're forcing to be in it.
Right, right.
You know, number 11, I understand that the world is not fair and I'm okay with that. I'm not. I do not resent the success of others.
I was raised on that one. That one gets me through the day. Every single day, I wanted something, my mom couldn't buy her something. She would say, "The world's not fair." That's what she would say.
And I say that too, though.
That one gets me through. I like the unfairness of it all, and, like,
I hate it.
If you soak it in, like, I just let it wash over me, and I'm feel comfortable.
No, I think you should strive for fairness, whatever that is. If you're saying, like, justice, it's basically saying there's no justice in the world,
but,
like, and like. I've resigned myself to that there's not a lot of justice in
the
world.
Let's talk about who the most winningest motherfuckers of 2017 is. Tom Brady and Donald Trump, right?
Yeah.
I mean, bad is winning. Like, bad is kicking the shit out of us.
Yeah, you know? And that's because we're starting on, again, where we don't have anything again. Like, they were born rich. They're just people that started rich and got to be rich for the rest of their lives, you know? And that's bullshit. I don't want that.
I
don't think that, like, and it's not, I'm not accepting that. The first part of the statement is that the world is not fair. And the second part of that is I'm okay with that.
Oh, yeah, I guess I'm not.
And
yeah,
I'm not,
right. I'm
not fucking
okay with that. You're right.
Very not okay with the fact that the world is not fair.
No, I agree.
That's a crazy thing to say. I'm okay with that. I'm fine with it. The world don't have to be fair. It's just fine. Yeah, I'm okay that some people like grow up without electricity. Dad, what are you gonna do? You
know? Yeah. For folks that don't have, folks that are born into a home of somebody that's completely incapable of taking care of them, the market will dictate what their lives become. You know?
And he says, I do not resent the success of others. And again, I don't resent.
Don't drink Haterade.
I don't resent the success of others. I resent the success of people like Chelsea Clinton.
Oh, for sure.
Like getting a Lifetime Achievement Award at 37 years old. Like, ain't I resent
much.
That because that is like not her success, you know? I resent when you say I do not resent the success of others. Like, it's just people in my class, people that come from meager means, or people that come even from like a middle class or whatever. I'm talking about people that don't deserve it.
But this has been a 10-minute street fight, which I think turns off people that maybe make $300,000 a year. Is like, I'm not very impressed by that, you know? Like, there's billionaires out there. There's fucking millionaires out there. And that shit's just absurd because all that money came from making sure that everybody did the work got the at least amount possible. You know? And that's unfair. That's what I'm against.
That's exactly what I'm against. That's some shit. Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, we do resent the success of others.
I completely resent the success of Rockefellers, Bilderbergs,
Carnegies.
Trumps,
Carnegies. Yeah, I remember one time I was fucking screaming at Brett about the men who...
The men who built America.
And Brett was like, I don't even know who the fuck Carnegie is. And I'm like, dude, you got to look into Carnegie. Then we went to Pittsburgh, and it's like with his name all over everything, it's like, you know, they're evil. Like, that's.
Yeah, I mean, they took all that fame. I still don't know anything about him.
He was do not watch that. It'll send you through the roof. I can only make it through like a half hour of it because
it seems like perfect background material for me, actually. I really enjoy things that like aren't what I want to see.
You
right
like
now.
Atlas Shrugged.
Yeah.
Brett is completely like, for himself, he will never be in a safe space.
Yeah, I have to be in foreign territory. Like, I don't like being comfortable and thinking that I know everything. It makes me feel very stupid and ignorant to be like, I'm smart. That's why I follow smart people on Twitter. I watch smart movies. I listen to smart music. I do smart everything. Like, I don't like that.
Yeah.
I like to be challenged.
Yeah. So the next thing we got, this is the last one on the sweat pledge. There's 12 of the sweat pledge. Thank you for the whole show, Mike Rowe. Thank you for giving us the material. I believe that all people are created equal. I also believe that all people make choices. Some choose to be lazy. Some choose to sleep in. I choose to work my butt off. Well, here's the thing. You can be lazy and sleep in and still be. I feel like I work my butt off and I'm lazy and I sleep in.
For sure. I mean, people are.
And what is he doing again, Brett? Again. What is Mike Rowe doing? What is Mike Rowe's pledge here? Is he fucking doing concrete? Is he building porches on the back of Florida rooms? Is he a guy that builds Florida rooms or installs those retractable awnings on the backs of people's houses? Is that what he does? No. He goes on TV and says like, hey, you guys need to get out there and start really fucking digging them ditches, okay?
Yeah, he, I don't know. Sorry, I got lost.
Well, fuck you, Mike Rowe. That's what I'm saying. Again, 2 days in a row, Mike Rowe gives us a show. Mike Rowe gives us a show.
Yeah, I am worried that we are missing out on valuing those people. And it bugs me because I feel like a lot of the poor folks that do these jobs think of themselves as being shit, you know?
Especially, you're right about that. Like, I don't do nothing. Hey, look, I'm not a person. I've had so many people like with like Walmart jobs and things like that that feel like, I mean, just feel like they're like, not shit. Yeah, like, oh, yeah, I just work at Walmart. And I remember working at McDonald's. I kind of had that feeling because it's just, it's one of those places that people, it's one of those places that people bring up as being a shitty place to work. You know what I mean?
Oh, it's very vocal about it, about how awful it is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, my heart's out to any person that has a job. Your job, I mean, like, if you say your job's bad, I agree with you. Your job is bad, and I want to help you make your job better. You know what I mean? If you're complaining at work, then listen. I believe that any complaint that you're making at work to make your job more comfortable for you is a perfectly valid complaint, as long as it doesn't fuck with other people's abilities to have a life. You know what I mean? Like the complaint, I don't like that kind of thing. I don't think it's, I'm not okay with the world not being fair. Like this guy, he has this attitude that really bothers me, and it's the Amiri King syndrome almost. He's this guy that gets touted as somebody who has real common sense that's asking people to settle for less than they deserve. His whole job is to tell you to settle for less that you
can
do.
He's not empowering anybody.
No, he's not. This isn't empowering at all.
This sweat etiquette is just like, it's just to basically make you feel comfortable being subjugated to somebody else's will and like sweating for somebody else.
Right. Yeah. So let's get this one last story out. I think we'll get one more story out of here for you. And
I got to finish me Malort.
Yeah. This is from the Columbus Dispatch, and this is something we've just been following lately. We decided to take an interest in the Columbus Police Department since we started since the beginning of the year, since I started to melt down about skinheads being cops.
Well, also, People's Justice Project in Columbus has done a great job drawing attention. I think I don't know when the show is coming out, but there's going to be rallies for Henry Green Thursday and Friday at 4 p.m. at the courthouse. Also, check out the hashtag What Happened to Jerron in it. There are plenty of links and articles and posts about what's happening with that case.
Well, okay, so the Columbus Police Department just announced this week an estimated 100,000 dash cam videos stored from Columbus Police Division traffic stops and call responses were deleted after an officer apparently made a few errant keystrokes, and they announced on Tuesday. So they deleted a bunch of evidence. I mean, it's kind of like, do people get off from dash cam evidence? Do you think that happens a lot?
You know, honestly, most court cases are plea bargained out. Most people don't see a trial. I do believe that in the trial, jurors are affected by seeing people do the shit or not do the shit or what went down.
Yeah, I mean, I think you can get a better idea for what happened if there's a body cam video, I guess.
Yeah.
But, like, it's weird that they would delete.
Okay, we got to remember, though. Dash cam is one that if they don't want you to see it, you won't see it.
Exactly.
They've kept them covered up and deleted and misused and not turned on for so long now that, I mean, they're not really a guarantee that we're going to get like an honest report from the police.
Yeah, they've been turned off. I mean, they lost all of 2015 and about 500 from 2016. And I just, yeah, you're right. If it's sympathetic to the person that got that is being arrested, like I feel sorry for somebody that evidence would get them off, but yeah. I never feel like that evidence would get anybody off, but it does feel corrupt. It feels like corruption. It's very odd that like a whole year of this information that people, that cases might hinge on, I guess.
Well, yeah,
it's just gone.
And honestly, I mean, I know that I do small time stuff, but like the guy that I work with that does our video stuff, he has like backups and protocols for, he gets the video and the audio every time. Like he doesn't lose files. You know what I mean? Like losing, there's very simple IT type of management protocols to keep this type of data safe. It's like pretty established. It's not reinventing the wheel, you know. It's just making sure you don't lose your fucking files, you know.
It's weird, right, that like I can usually recover most things, but like they just lost all of something, you know. I hate, like they
the
say
Columbus of police also, I mean,
they're secretive is the thing I've been learning about them since Brett has been having me kind of since Brett keeps me informed and we go to the marches. The thing I'm learning about them is they have a real fuck you attitude toward people who ask them what happened when they did things. And this is all cops. This is kind of that thing.
Well,
but
they were also investigated about 15 years ago for racial profiling and racial issues like within the departments, and they somehow avoided a federal investigation, and they're one of the only like precincts in history that has done that. When you dive into it, there's also apparently the National Fraternal Order of Police is based out of Columbus as well. So like the National FOP has a huge sway in our town with protocol and what gets reported on, what is news. Like they are huge here.
Yeah. Well, and I just think that like I would say we can't say for sure that this guy didn't just fuck up and delete all the files from 2015, but I
sneezed and like tripped. He probably took a huge hit of dip and then just like his depth perception got all fucked up and he tried to lean on a table and then he just fell into the keyboard.
It says here, police previously the deletion happened March 8th when a sworn officer working in the Technical Services Bureau attempted to reclassify thousands of video files. So he just accidentally deleted them. He was just like, shit, I highlighted them all. And then I accidentally...
Whoopsie, I did a control A and then slipped and hit delete.
I just feel like Jerron Thomas, part of the thing is that like it's under question what happened to Jerron Thomas and Henry Green. Like it's very in question, and it seems, and they have repeatedly been like, we're not going to investigate this. We're never going to investigate this. We're not going to tell you why. And like,
They still are holding all the information back.
Right. They have a private attitude. And I'm only speaking from what I know of what's happening. I can't say for sure somebody purposely deleted those files, but it squares with like other things that you see happening. They're holding back information, deleting files and things like that. Like they,
yeah, I mean, it's suspect. I mean, and that's the thing, man. Like, I mean, I know that like that files get deleted. Like I've corrupted all kinds of audio and shit for Street Fight Radio. But like, if you all wasn't doing all kinds of dirty deeds as well, it wouldn't be suspect. That's what a lot of this, I mean, there's so much about this that it's like, that just comes down to the relationship of the police with the communities, you know, that they're supposed to be serving.
They don't give a shit.
Yeah.
They just don't, like care about what you have to say about what they're doing. They don't want to hear what anybody else has to say about their actions in the community. They're not interested in trying to change things. They're interested in trying to change you. And it's not even really about changing you. It's just punishing you.
I've seen so many Blue Lives Matters flags now. It's incredible how many cars have those stickers on the back. I spent a few hours on the highways this weekend, and they're just so much more prevalent. And it makes me just... I mean, that's just so disheartening to think that people are that hardcore behind, like the cracking down on folks like that, you know?
Yep. Yeah, absolutely.
And, you know, I'm also somebody that really can get behind. Like, I love cop movies. Like, I love all the, like, brave cops in the movies and stuff. But that's just not what's happening. And like, we're setting aside entire... communities' voices in favor of believing that these cops couldn't do anything wrong. You know, this narrative that, like, well, whatever they do is the ultimate justice. We, like, in the conservative narrative, they have, like, divine punishment at this point. I think they've been elevated to a point of being the last decider. Whatever the cop says, they decide whether you live or die is what they're really, like, being pushed to at some point. You
absolutely.
Know?
I feel that way. So that's it, man. Just, you know, the Columbus Police Department.
I drink a lot of spirits, so sometimes I'll go too heavy.
The Columbus Police Department is deleting files.
Yeah, they are. They're deleting their evidence.
It feels so... It feels weird. And like you said, it might not mean anything. You know, that's not even a question, by the way, in the Dispatch article. The Dispatch article says it will not have any... bearing on any prosecutions.
Well,
it's like, oh, well,
because,
thanks a
lot. No, it should have some bearing. No, the people that used to have evidence, it's like, how can we give them a fair trial?
Yeah.
We used to have the tapes and we don't have it now.
Well, they're not saying how it would affect defense attorneys. You know what I mean? Like, they're not explaining how it would affect defense attorneys. They're only explaining how it would affect... don't worry about prosecutions. Prosecutions are going to go on as scheduled. Yeah. Everything's going to be okay.
We're going to make money, baby.
I don't know how it's affecting the defense, and I'm sure it's probably not. I don't know. I never really know. But,
yeah,
like, it
give
just
you extra
feels.
Credit on your sentence.
They no, give you a few, they probably
they
don't.
They give you a few jail bucks that they're like, well, we lost your footage, so you got 12 months in jail bucks that we can apply to your sentence. If your time is less than 12 months, then you get off scot-free.
God damn. Well, I mean, you did something there, Brett. All right. Well, we'll see you guys next week.
Yeah. Thanks for coming back and tuning in. We love all y'all. Give us money on Patreon so we can do something outrageous. Peace. I keep